Hey guys, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer is Lou Pellegrino. This week, a return of the Sports Media Roundtable. John Oran, the fine media reporter of Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal, and Jimmy Traina, now my colleague at Sports Illustrated. We give you more than an hour of sports media talk on the biggest stories of the last couple weeks, including Tony Romo heading to CBS, replacing Phil Simms. If you are a sports media nerd, you're going to love this. John Oran and Jimmy Traina. All right. The return of John Oran of the Sports Business Daily and Journal and Jimmy Traina, now of Sports Illustrated. John and Jimmy, welcome back to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hey, RD.
How much did it pain you to say that, Richard?
Apparently, everybody can come home if they want.
Is that the reason why you already dropped two F bombs when you messed up the intro that people aren't going to hear?
Yeah, it's usually I think Lou Pellegrino, my producer, would admit that I'm generally speaking one take. Tom Verducci is the greatest one take artist at Sports Illustrated. He does videos or podcasts or whatever. He's one take. He never screws up. But yes, I did. My intro sucked, and that's why we had to redo it again. And quite frankly, I think this intro sucked too. But we're going to keep it. Moving on from intros, let us start, gentlemen, with Tony Romo. And I'm going to start with you, John Oran, because Jimmy just interrupted my flow before. Tony Romo, as we know, has been hired by CBS to be the number one analyst replacing Phil Simms. Everybody on this podcast has written about this. I've written multiple columns at this point. John, I've seen what you've written. I don't know if you've written a singular column on it, but let's start with you. John, how do you view this move? And I'm making this intentionally open-ended, and then we're going to get to sort of the micro discussion of what we think the challenges Romo are going to face this year, whether there was anybody else out there. But as just a sort of a take it as the news itself, as a general item, what did you think of Romo replacing Simms?
The second biggest sports media move of the week to a trainer going back to SI, right? I'm fascinated by this move on several different levels. One is, I think Romo can still play football. I mean, I'm not a football analyst, but he's old as a quarterback. But there are a lot of teams apparently that would love to have him either as a backup quarterback or potentially as a starting quarterback. I'm fascinated at athletes at the end of their playing careers that sort of give up those years of playing football. I'm also fascinated at CBS, and you reference this in one of your columns. You know, I think that they bowed to pressure in terms of getting rid of Mike Carey a year ago. Anytime you listen to Phil Simms and you go to Twitter and you read the newspapers the next day, so it's not just a Twitter mob; it's also people that have had time and editors. You know, and he just gets killed consistently by a lot of people.
Right.
And I think at some point, I think CBS had to recognize that their top analyst was drawing a lot more negative attention than the top analyst at any other network, probably including Gruden. I would say who was running a close second to Simms.
I agree with that, Jimmy. Then, I'm sorry, John. If you feel free to continue. I didn't mean to interrupt right there.
Well, then the third thing there is, from Romo's standpoint, like the idea of just coming in and getting that white hot blazing spotlight of the top analyst gig. That's a tough one to step into. I mean, so many people are going to be harping on every word and every utterance and everything that he says. And, if you take a look at the way Troy Aikman did things, he started over in Europe and sort of built his way up. All the big analysts didn't start at number one. They started below. They got their reps and ended up coming up. And I think that's something that bears watching.
All excellent points, John. We'll hit on all those. Jimmy, again, as a sort of a top line, what were your thoughts when you read or heard the news that Romo replaced Simms?
I was shocked only because I firmly believe it was, and John alluded to this, I think it was definitely a move in response to social media. And I was surprised CBS would do that. And I guess I also in my head would have thought maybe Nance wouldn't have wanted Sims to get the boot, and maybe would have put up a fight, but I don't know the backstory on that as much. But I think that where I disagree a little bit with John and with I think a lot of people is that I don't think every single word Tony Romo says when he's broadcasting now will be analyzed and dissected. I think maybe some media people do that, but for fans and the average Joe out there, this is clearly an addition by subtraction move. And just the fact that we don't have to suffer through Phil Sims every Sunday will make things a lot easier for Tony Romo in terms of getting some leeway for his first year or maybe two.
There's a lot of things to unpack there. That's actually an interesting observation by Jimmy. I think I tend to agree with him in terms of there'll be focus on Romo. It might not be every play, and maybe he'll get a little bit of a break, but the focus is going to be there. All right, first off, CBS says that they did not bow down to social media pressure. They claim that...
Well, they're lying.
Lying. They claim that with Carey. They claim that with Sims. What is clear, I think, and all of us agree, having covered this stuff, is that the animus for Sims nationally was impossible to ignore. In particular markets like Denver, he's really, really disliked, whether fairly or unfairly. He just is. I would argue that his performance had absolutely dropped over the last couple of years. So like Jimmy says, I think there's value in an addition by subtraction. The big issue is, John, and I'll go to you again, it's a big risk, I think, to bring in someone into the booth with zero network experience into the schedule Romo's going to have. Not just Sunday highest-profile games, but Thursday as well. We were both on the call where Sean McManus said it's a risk, but we think it's a manageable risk. I don't know, John. I mean, they obviously like Romo, and they said all the right things, but I think that is a hard job for someone who has 5 years, 10 years of experience. Tony Romo has zero.
And what especially I would find to be concerning is, you know, Phil Sims, I think that all three of us would agree over the past couple of years as was not at the top of his game, I think is a safe way of saying that.
Right.
But that also coincides, guys, with him doing the Thursday night game and then 2 days later coming – or 3 days later coming back and having to do, you know, the national Sunday game.
Great point.
Those are a lot of – those are just a lot of reps. You just got to – you have to get to know four different teams, and it's difficult to do. And one of the things that Tony Romo is going to come in and do, he's not just going to do a game a week. He's doing the Thursday night games, too, for the first half of the season. And that for somebody that's brand new coming in – I just, you know, he's going to get a lot of reps, but it's in a lot of ways, it's just going to be learn while you learn type of thing.
Jimmy,
say something about
please.
That? I totally disagree with both of you. I don't think it's a big risk at all, because if he comes in there and he's bad, then, you know, they'll move him down to the fourth or fifth team next year, and they'll put someone else in that role, and they'll move on. I mean, it's a job calling an NFL game. It's not like if he, you know, isn't good, the world's going to end for them. It's, you know, they'll move on next year. I don't see it as this huge risk.
Here's one thing, Jimmy. I'm not sure. I think that he is, I mean, I haven't seen the contract, but John, I would think he would be contractually guaranteed certainly this year, if not 2 years. So I don't see them moving him, even if he really doesn't have a good year. And secondly, you don't, Jimmy, in my mind, you don't make this such a public declaration. You don't hold this kind of press conference. You don't pay him the kind of money that you paid him to not have the investment in him for multiple years. I actually don't think that there will be the option of moving him down. I wrote a column this week understanding and saying that there's no way CBS is going to do this, but the best possible thing they could do, both for viewers and I thought for Tony Romo, was to make Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts their number one team this year. They've earned that on merit. I think they're their best football calling team. You have them do both the Sunday and Thursday game, and you let Romo quietly ease his way into the job. But John,
well, you and I
go
you
ahead.
And I said that for years. You and I said that for years. But for some reason, CBS thinks Jim Nance is God's gift to broadcasting, even though viewers really don't care about Jim Nance in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I think I would disagree on that. I think people like Nance, and I think he's a professional broadcaster. I think they really love him on golf. But I agree with you in the sense that as a football game caller, he's not Al Michaels. He's not Pat Summerall. He's good, but eminently could be replaced as the number one by Ian Eagle. John,
right.
John, where do you sort of? I mean, we know CBS is not taking my idea clearly, but where do you stand in terms of, this idea that Jimmy threw out there that, like, you know, if Romo doesn't work out, they'll move him and figure it out next year. I don't see that. I mean, I think invested in this guy for multiple years at probably a gigantic salary figure.
Yeah, so let me push back on Jimmy for a second. Now, this isn't like a politics
John,
podcast.
John, if you're going to push back on Jimmy, take all the time you want, please.
Okay, can I have the floor, please, Richard? In terms of sports media, it's a big risk. They went out very publicly, and they're bringing this guy in as the top analyst on their top property that gets the most viewers by far. So it's not going to cause the end of the world. I don't think anybody's pretending that. But
announcers
I think
move on and get shuffled all the time. It's not, it's not that big.
How many number one analysts have been knocked off their perch?
Well,
you can't come up with many.
It used to happen way more than it happens now. I mean, NBC went through a bunch with, Sims and Collinsworth and Paul McGuire and Parcells. I mean, it used to happen more than it happens now. And I think what happens now is I think these networks give these guys a ton of money. Like you said, like John Gruden gets all this money. ESPN's not going to move off from him. Yeah, they probably did give Romo a lot of money. But if he's going to be this catastrophe, then they'll move on.
But what I find to be fascinating and about Romo is that I think I've now found like five different things to be fascinating about this because it's a wild story. Have you found this, Richard? Every single person in TV who I respect, 100% of them say he's like a can't miss prospect. They identify this thing that I think lay people I can't even see, but they all identify it in Romo as somebody who's going to be good. So when Sean McManus says, it is a risk, but it's sort of a low risk. There are a lot of other people that feel that way. And I know Eric Shanks and Fox were going after him pretty hard to get him. I know NBC and ESPN were kicking the tires on him. A lot of people wanted to have Tony Romo just because he's able to sort of connect with the audience and he's able to explain really complicated football plays in layman's terms, which is, exactly what they're looking for. And so,
CBS making this such a big deal for them is Fox has an opening for their number two job. So, Fox was going after him hard. He is the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, which if he was coming in from, the Detroit Lions, I don't think this would be as big a deal. So it is a big name type of thing, which is why CBS is going all out on it. But I don't, again, think if he falls flat on his face, it's the end of the world for CBS.
Yeah, so a couple things that both of you guys said there. John, there's no doubt that the interest in this guy was obviously super high. Jimmy hits on one of the obvious reasons. Quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, most famous team in football for a long time, under the media glare and spotlight. You saw him do millions of interviews. He was very good in production meetings. But, here's the thing, John, and we both know this about the television business. Executives fall in love with people. Left and right, sometimes they think who are can't miss and can't misses become misses. Ray Lewis is cardinal example number one in the last couple of years. Fire and brimstone from the Ravens. ESPN falls in love with this guy. They think they're going to have this defensive game changer on air. And Ray Lewis turns out to be pretty flat, to be blunt. So you don't know until the person gets to the booth. And I think if we're all being honest, and I think this is an honest podcast, we obviously have no idea what Romo's going to be. Having heard him on the conference call that just happened this week, it's clear that he's bright. It's clear that he's introspective. He's not a rah-rah guy. This is not John Gruden or John Madden. And I would think that it's going to take the listeners or the viewers a little bit of time to get used to him. I don't think he John, I don't know how you see it. He did not. He's not a guy who's going to come on the screen and kind of blow you away with energy and charisma. He's going to be more of a contemplative, thinking analyst. He's not Mike Mayock, but he's more of a thinking person's analyst, which I think has the potential to be great. But he's not a guy in his, I think, in his first game who you're going to walk away like, oh, my God, this guy's the game changer of game changers.
Yeah, he's not changing broadcasting by any means. But I think that he's going to be able to explain plays and explain the game in a way that, you know, my wife or my mother might be able to understand a little bit better.
Right, which is obviously sort of the framework of what these guys want. Jimmy, I got so many people on Twitter asking me about what do you know about Jim Nance and Phil Simms, and was it Nance who made the move to fire Simms? I mean, you know, it's impossible to explain this to people, but Jim Nance is not the president of CBS Sports. He's not the chairman. The executives ultimately are the ones who their ass is on the line for a deal. And
but the move's not going to happen without his approval.
I think, and John, if you want to weigh in here, I think they absolutely run it by Nance, and Nance absolutely has to have chemistry with Romo. But at the end of the day, that move is made by the executives. Jim Nance doesn't make talent moves. It's the executives who make the talent move. Now, if you want to say if Jim Nance hated Tony Romo, would they hire him? No, of course not. But Jim Nance, right. Jim Nance did not order the code red on Phil Simms. At least I don't believe so.
No, CBS wanted him.
I have to
believe that. He became available.
Completely. I mean,
Fox wanted him. They were in a competition for him. So CBS went after him. And they probably went to Nance and said, we want Tony Romo. And he said, go get him.
John, you are essentially become an auxiliary member of the CBS Sports PR departments, given your Sean given your Sean McManus piece. So you can feel free to weigh in here.
Look, obviously Nance knew what was going on. I mean, I for one think Nance is one of the best play-by-play guys out there. I think that he does a great job on golf. I think he does a great job on college basketball during the tournament. And I think that, you know, given the right analyst, I think that he'll be very good on football too. So it's silly to think that he was caught blindsided by this announcement. But if he was like, I don't know, if he was a little wishy-washy, I mean, this was going to happen regardless of whether he bought in or not. The only way this doesn't happen is if he goes to the wall and says, you know, I hate that guy, I don't want to do it with him. But that would not fit Jim Nance's personality at all either.
Sergio Garcia. He's got a one iron, 134 feet out. That's my Jim Nance at the Masters. Jimmy, you absolutely do not love Jim Nance the way John Oran does, correct?
I just think there are so many better, more enjoyable play-by-play people in football and in college. You know, John mentioned college basketball. Vern's better than Nance by a million miles.
Well, the thing is,
and so is Ian Eagle, for that matter.
Yeah, listen, again, Jim Nance, I happen to like Jim Nance. Generally speaking, I'm not one who loves like vanilla over the top announcers, and golf just drives me insane with the platitudes and the nonsense. But I think it's legit. Like
the patrons.
The thing about Nance is it's legit. Like that is who he is. He is not shticking it up for the audience, and I respect that. I mean, he is who he is on air. He's not pretending. So I Jimmy, I know what you're saying, and I think he will never Jimmy, you have to admit this, and I'm not PRing for Jim Nance.
You vanilla, he's vanilla.
You have to admit though, he will always give you a professional broadcast. He'll never embarrass you as a play-by-play person. Agreed?
I mean, he won't.
It's a yes or no?
But yes, Jimmy,
congratulations.
I agree with you. Is he CBS's best college basketball play-by-play person? No, not at all. Ian Eagle's better. I would argue Harlan's better. I thought Gus was better. Is he their best football announcer? No, I think Ian Eagle's better. Is he their best golf announcer? Yes, I think he probably is. But John Oran, as you know, it doesn't matter what we think. It matters what Sean McManus and David Burson think, and they think this guy is the face of their network, and thus he will be the face of the network, correct?
And it also matters what the NFL thinks, and it also
Correct.
Matters what the NCAA thinks.
And the Masters.
And they love, and they love Nance as well.
They do.
I would push back. I think Nance is easily in college basketball as good as those other guys.
Right, you guys are talking over each other. So we heard John. Jimmy, go ahead.
No, I don't want to talk about Jim Nance anymore. It's enough.
No,
I think
this whole
more interesting,
this podcast now is only going to be about Jim Nance. There's no other
topic.
The
more interesting, I think the more interesting question for both of you, since this is your beats,
right,
or both your beats, both of your beats, however you say it.
Right, get to the question.
What I have not heard anything about, really, is what happens now at Fox with the number two team, which calls a playoff game every season. Who is going to replace John Lynch and join Kevin Burkhardt?
All right, well, first,
what are we hearing, gentlemen?
We also never got to what happens to Phil Simms. I'll quickly weigh in and say,
Nobody cares.
I think Phil will quickly come to the realization that getting paid for a couple more years of number one analyst money is awesome, and he will be the number three or four analyst for CBS. John, quickly, agree, disagree? You got something else there?
Disagree. I think he'll remain at CBS, and I think they're going to move him into the studio.
Wow, I like so taking the Tony Gonzalez spot.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
The worst NFL studio show gets worse.
Well, it gets older. That's for sure. They could use a current guy there if they put Simms in. All right, we'll watch that, John. I do think Phil can be acerbic. He's got takes, and so that would fit with his personality, John. That's interesting, and perhaps will happen. All right, Jimmy, to answer your question about Fox, there is some thought about putting Spielman in that position, although I still think he's better as a college football person just because I think he's a great analyst on college football. They have a terrific play-by-play person in Kevin Burkhardt. I would think as of now, as we get pretty late in the campaign, this is just a guess on my part, but I think it's going to come internally. They're going to take one of their internal people and put him at number two. John, are you hearing anything? Because I honestly do not have any new reporting on this.
Yeah, I know they're looking at things. My guess, this isn't reporting, this is just a guess, they're going to take Daryl Johnson, who used to be the number two, and put him back up at number two, possibly team him up with Burkhardt.
That's interesting. Maybe
even Charles Davis, but I definitely see it as going internal.
I like Charles Davis. I actually think that would be fine by me. I think he works hard. I think he's bright. I think he's always been an excellent analyst on college football, and it's done a pretty good job in the NFL games. Jimmy, would you you have a preference between Daryl Johnston and Charles Davis?
I would prefer Charles Davis. I just think Daryl Johnston's been there, done that guy. I mean, he's been in the number two role, and I mean, I don't think he's anything special.
I mean, you got to admit, though, not exactly the easiest assignment when you got to give Siragusa all that time, right?
Well, he's gone now. So.
I know, but in the Albert, Moose, and Goose
right.
nonsense.
Well, no, he's been without him for a couple of years.
Oh, he has? Oh, yeah, you're right. All right, whatever. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there.
His shadow still remains, though, Richard.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. Once Fox got rid of its seven most senior PR people, I don't talk to them as much, so I'll do my best to get back on there.
How about Jason Whitlock is the number two analyst, Richard?
I bet you Mike McCarthy would like that. But, I mean, who knows? All right, let's move on quickly. Michelle Beadle is now your full-time host of Countdown for the ABC version of Countdown, although that's now ending because as we're taping this, the NBA season is just about over. And more importantly, she gets the Countdown hosting role for the playoffs and the finals. That's the big thing is the finals, because that leads into games with 20 million plus. We could go in a lot of places here, including what we think of Beto, but I want to start with you, John, because this is people are listening to this podcast for, inside baseball stuff and obviously for Jimmy Trainor's personality. But so here is very inside baseball and, apologies if you're not into the inside baseball. And let me say hello to the ESPN PR department who will be absolutely transcribing this part of the interview. ESPN, John, in my opinion, bungled this. How they screwed it up, in my opinion, was that when you announce that Michelle Beadle is going to be your full-time Countdown person in the middle of the season, which is fine. She is liked very much by Kevin Wildes and Connor Schell and the people who now control the NBA. That's fine. You make the move. You praise Beadle. All good. In that press release, John, you must let viewers know why you're doing this and where Sage Steele is going. They didn't do that. Sage Steele was MIA in this press release, thus setting ESPN up for 3 or 4 days of Sage Steele was fired, one not true. Sage Steele was removed from the show because she has conservative viewpoints. Again, not true.
Not true.
She has conservative viewpoints, but that's not why she was removed. Sage Steele is joining the Trump administration. I mean, who knows what rumors were going to come from this? So you saw all this happen. This was a screw up on ESPN's part, right? You have to, even if it's a quick paragraph, let people know that Sage Steele is going to SportsCenter on the road. We wish, you know, she's an important part of this organization, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, that's basic. I could tell you that when we get beginning reporters coming in and they see a press release like that, you know, instead of just rewriting the press release, like, okay, who are they replacing and why? I mean, it's the first question out of any reporter's mouth, I would think. And I found it to be not surprising, but they had to come out with a statement from Skipper.
Skipper.
How long after that?
Right.
That was like
a couple days.
You know, 24 hours later, saying we still support Sage. We still support Sage, which they do. Sage Steele still has a very big role at ESPN,
big
on SportsCenter.
Big contract, right?
So the idea that they just kind of like did this, and you know, gave the promotion to Beadle, a well-deserved promotion, by the way. When you Tran and I did the draft for studio analysts, do you remember I picked Michelle Beadle pretty early based on what I saw on the NBA, so I, you know, it didn't surprise me that much, but yeah, you have to explain it. I found that to be really bizarre that they let that sort of go as they did.
Now again, why she wasn't on there, I'm not out of pocket blaming ESPN PR, because it strikes me that there is a reason perhaps that Sage wasn't on there. I don't know if Beatles reps demanded no Sage. I don't know if Sage didn't want to be on there. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate, but it seems that there was a reason for that. Regardless, if you're ESPN PR and management, you must push back. You have to say, guys,
I think they thought they had some cover. Because there was an AP story that sort of talked about it. But the AP story didn't get nearly as viral as that press release did.
Of course. And Jimmy, I'm not eliminating you here. You're going to come here and say. I'm saying is, you can't Bermuda Triangle Sage Steele here, because you already know as an organization, there are so many people out there who are writing essentially every day that you are a left-leaning, progressive organization. You know, you're the left-wing sports network of the Democratic Party. I mean, at a certain point, I think people are going to accuse ESPN of joining Marx and Lenin at this point as leftists. So you have to counter this, because you know you're going to get some bad press with Sage. So at the same time, go out and all praise Sage, et cetera, et cetera. All right, Jimmy, John and I filibuster for a while. We apologize there.
Yeah.
How did you see all – I know you're not the biggest NBA guy, but how did you see all this?
Well, that's not true. I am a big NBA guy.
I was told you didn't like the NBA.
Yeah, I thought you liked
ridiculous,
the
Knicks. Ridiculous.
You don't like the Olympics. I know that. And there's basketball in the Olympics.
Right. I'm not going to get into this.
All right. Go
anyway,
ahead.
I think you're sort of on the wrong track here. You're all getting into like the PR aspect of it. Well, and I find this story way more fascinating than Romo Sims. Because why exactly was this move made? There's still, like, what was the, like, so Sage Steele is one of the hosts the entire season. And then, what, 3 weeks before the season ends, 2 weeks before the season ends, they give her the boot. And it's not like Michelle Beadle is noticeably better or, like, what exactly was the mindset? What was the thinking of ESPN? That's what I would like to know more than anything.
You ask.
Well, the mindset
question.
Is that they're going into the most, they're going to see the most viewers for their NBA programming coming through the playoffs, and they like the way that Michelle Beadle hosts the pregame show. She's sort of like it's free flowing and lets it go.
But
Sage
so then
very
they don't like the way Sage Steele hosts the pregame show.
No, they didn't like it that, as much. They felt that she was too regimented, and she was too like, okay, we have 5 minutes to talk about this, and if it went 6 minutes, then you know she would cut it off and kind of go to the next thing. And Michelle Beadle is more free flowing. Sage's style works very well on SportsCenter, and that's where they put her. And she still has a very big job, and she still has a very big role at ESPN. So it just didn't work with her as well at for the NBA pregame show.
I don't know. I always liked her. on the NBA pregame show. So I didn't see it as like a, you know, major.
Well, Jimmy, you, I'm actually, your point here is good, and hopefully I'll get into this more in over the next week with some kind of something about why this move happened, or at least why ESPN said it happened. But, you know, Jimmy, you are correct in that. Let's say both of you are correct in that, John, ESPN executives believe Beadle has a better flow with Jalen Rose or Billups or whoever, okay, and that they like that version better. But then to go back to Jimmy's point, you do that like a week or two before the end of the regular season. I get that all these eyeballs are on the playoffs, but that is a weird time, you would agree, John, to like make that move, right? You either make that move at the beginning of the year and Beadle is your front-facing person for this, or I would say don't you let Sage ride out the year if she's been doing it with these guys from the jump?
Like, would there have been a drastic difference if she worked three NBA Finals game and
there would be no four? There would be no difference in the ratings. I think we all agree on that. The question would be, and this is where the subjectivity comes in: is it a better show with Beadle and those two guys versus Sage? It probably. I like Sage. A lot of people crap on Sage. I like her. I think I actually like her as a host too. Do I think Beadle's a better fit for that show? I do. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would say that the timing is odd. I've never seen this type of timing before. I know that they think that Beadle hosts a better show, and they have more eyeballs coming, you know, for the playoffs. But I can't explain why they didn't do it sort of a couple of months ago as opposed to right before the playoffs.
The thing there, Jimmy, hold on one second, Jimmy. I promise I'll get you. The thing there that's interesting is that Sage has had that's a bumpy road for her on that show. I mean, think of how public that thing was with Simmons, even though it was on air. And you could sort of talk about it, hey, you know, it was just something bad that happened on air. But listen, a lot of times things happen on air because you know there's some problems behind the scenes. So I haven't asked Sage about this. I hope to. But, like, that show has not exactly been, like, the smoothest sailing for her. Not only has she, you know, she's had to deal with just a changing of the guard. That started off with, if I remember, Wilbon, Magic, Simmons, right? And then it became, or maybe Rose was part of that. Then it's Rose and Simmons. Then it's no Magic anymore, and it's Billups and Rose. I mean, it seems like that show, as always, every year changed cast members where the host has to try to deal with all that stuff.
And, yeah, and they keep trying to get to where TNT is.
Hold on, John. Go to Jimmy here.
No, and the issue with that, too, is that this is no disrespect to anyone that works at the show. I'm sure they're all smart people who work hard. But no matter who's hosting the show, whether it's Sage Steele or Michelle Beadle and whoever's on it, Magic Johnson or Jalen Rose or whatever, there's not one NBA fan in America who looks at that show and doesn't think that it's just, you know, double A ball compared to inside the NBA. I mean, I know they get the finals and that's a big deal, but it's always going to be thought of as, you know, the minor leagues compared to Ernie, Chuck, and Kenny.
Yeah, well, John, I think at this point, even the ESPN on-air talent and the behind-the-scenes people know that they don't even look at it as a competition because, to Jimmy's point, they know that one show is one of the great studio shows of all time. I think they look at it as we're just trying to improve our own product.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the TNT does their own thing, and they're almost—it's almost like a different level, you know, Major Leagues versus AAA or something like that. So I would agree with that.
John, you're connected to ESPN in terms of you have a lot of sources there. Do you think Sage Steele is long for that company? Will we see her 4 years from now? Hosting SportsCenter, doing something else. The one thing, I don't know if you guys want to get into this. I mean, we've gotten into this other podcast. The SportsCenter brand is changing massively, almost on by the day. It's being downgraded compared to other stuff. I don't know how many SportsCenter anchors are even going to exist in the next 2 or 3 or 4 years. So if you have someone like Sage, whose sort of strength is SportsCenter, and you're reducing SportsCenter outside of the Jemele Hill, Michael Smith, Scott Van Pelt model, probably Mike Greenberg-ish model, you know, you're putting all the other SportsCenters on like ESPN2, you know, you almost wonder, John, how many SportsCenter types are going to be around? And then if you continue on that train of thought, how many SportsCenter types are going to be around where they're paying seven figures to? Or are they not just going to want a cost cut and, you know, let's bring some 28-year-old who, you know, will pay $150,000-$200,000, put them on SportsCenter for ESPN2 and we're okay with not making them the next Patrick and Oberman.
Yeah, I think Sage will be around. I think Sage is good on air. I think that Sage has the support of the top ESPN brass. I mean, that statement from Skipper about one talent was almost remarkable.
I can't
recall him coming out and doing something like that before. So I think that she has a lot of high, well-placed support. I think she's good on camera. And I think that they're going to find a role for her that's going to fit her talents better than that NBA studio show.
What about you, Jimmy? You've seen some of these changes for SportsCenter. By the way, I'm not sure I agree with John on that. I would tend to bet that high-profile SportsCenter types will start to be reduced over the next couple of years. Sage may be the exception. John Skipper and others
we're in a complete agreement there, Richard. Complete.
It's less about Sage, my sort of thesis, and more about how much she makes. But we'll see. Jimmy, you got any? I know we're more closer to this in terms of reporting it, but as a viewer, what do you think?
I mean, I'm the viewer that's sort of gotten away from SportsCenter. So, I mean, I don't watch, you know, it's not my on my daily viewing. So I guess that's sort of the issue they're going through, trying to find a new format and making it about the host. So I think it'll always be around. But I mean, I don't know, obviously, what's going to go on with their staff, and I don't even want to speculate about that, but I think what I find fascinating is this whole, you know, ESPN is so liberal and, you know, they're basically moving Sage around because she's a conservative. I mean, the fact that this is actually, like, there are people who believe that. It's
no,
not even
wrong.
A... It's...
All right, Jimmy, hold it.
Like,
Jimmy,
I laugh about it.
Jimmy, we'll get into that deep, and I want you to sleep
well,
on
when?
It. I want
it's
you, Jimmy, 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 hold on, Jimmy. I want you to sleep on that thought for a second, because we are going to head to our sponsor, Casper Mattress.
This is Sports Illustrated's Media Podcast with Richard Deitch.
All right, let me tell you about Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminates commission-driven inflated prices. The award-winning sleep surface at Casper was developed in-house. It has a sleek design and is delivered in a small, how-did-they-do-that size box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. Now, everybody knows this. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notorious high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. Let's talk about quality. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. Let's talk about convenience. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns with a 100-night home trial. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. All right, let's get to the fine points here. Casper is a fantastically engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Combine supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. And if you're looking for reviews, Casper has over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars. It's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress, and you can check that out on either Casper or Amazon or Google reviews. Free shipping and returns to the United States and Canada. Try Casper for 100 nights, risk-free in your own house. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper is designed, developed, and assembled in the USA. And for listeners of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, so listen up here, it's a special offer just for you. You can get $50 off toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Richard. That's the key, R-I-C-H-A-R-D. So $50 off any mattress purchase, go to www.casper.com, then go /Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D. Terms and conditions apply. All right, back from the beautiful ad read by me. All right, Jimmy, as when we headed for the break, you were talking about the listen, we could do a whole show, and I think John agrees, on sort of ESPN as a political organization and how much of this ESPN is left-leaning as a group versus ESPN has singular talents who are left-leaning and progressive, but that does not mean the network has become the new DNC. You mentioned this within the context of Sage Steele. And Jimmy, again, I am with you. I mean, it is ludicrous to think that the company would remove somebody because they have conservative takes from a I mean, do you realize like how many people would be outraged by that prospect? I mean, that's insane. The other thing is they kept Sage Steele on their airwaves for how many, like, she's been a conservative or has conservative views for a decade or plus now, however long she's put that out there. She wasn't removed before. So, like, they've obviously been okay with her and her views. So it is, I get that there's a lot of people out there who want to frame ESPN as this. And I'm not saying that they don't have a ton of people who are Democrats and left-leaning, and you see them all on Twitter. I get it. But this idea that, you know, that Donna Brazile and John Podesta are running ESPN is insane.
Well, Donna Brazile shouldn't be running everything.
I agree.
Number one.
Ridiculous but that CNN ever paid her money. I'm with you. Go ahead.
Here's the thing. I think it comes down to the fact that, especially in this day and age of Twitter and social media, most people, for some reason, have a very hard time handling two thoughts at once. And you said it yourself, and it's two thoughts at once. Yes, most people at ESPN are liberal or
front-facing, right.
Two, people are not losing their jobs, though, because they are conservative.
Right.
It's two separate thoughts, and that's what people struggle with. No one's going to deny that if you just go by what you see on social media, that it's the same thing at Sports Illustrated. Most people lean toward the liberal side. However, they're not whacking people because they are a Trump supporter or they are conservative or they, you know, it's just so ridiculous that it, but it also shouldn't be surprising. I mean, look where we're at as a country.
John, let's, Jimmy, you can weigh in on this, but a lot of this has come from Jimmy's old place, his beloved Fox Sports. And I understand it. Whether they believe it or not, it's a great strategy to frame ESPN in the marketplace as, you know, the left wing sports arm, and so come to our network if you want, like, you know, red meat sports opinions. It's kind of a brilliant thing to push out there. But I think having talked to you on this, and we know a lot of people at ESPN, both who are conservatives and who are Democrats, the idea that they would remove somebody just from an opinion, this is not the Schilling situation, the idea that they would remove somebody from an NBA show because she's a conservative is, I mean, it's just preposterous. It just is.
All right. Yeah, two things. One is I don't believe that Sage got moved off because of her opinions. In fact, I'm virtually certain of that. I don't want to relitigate the Curt Schilling, but sort of the way that transpired has created this whole mess.
I agree with you. So well said.
He effectively got moved off because of his political opinions. I mean,
that's not true, though. It wasn't his political opinions. It was that he was a whack job. There's a difference. Sage Steele and Sam Ponder just got a promotion. She's a conservative, but she's not a nasty, vicious loon like Curt Schilling. There's a big difference.
Well,
it's how you handle those beliefs.
Well, the Schilling thing is complicated.
Curt Schilling got moved out by being a wacky, vicious loon that was supporting the law of the land in North Carolina. It was an established law. That's hardly wacky and extreme.
No, but he didn't get removed for one incident. There were several incidents.
Right. I mean, John, I think, here's the thing I see. I actually happen to agree. I'm not even trying to couch it here. I agree with both of you. Schilling, as I wrote, should have never been suspended, in my opinion, for some of the earlier stuff. Because Stephen A. Smith doesn't get suspended for threatening an MVP on the air. So I'm with anyone who believes there was a double standard on Schilling early on. But, John, I think that what happened with Schilling is, as Jimmy points out, there's a preponderance of issues that continue to come up, including him sending out a meme that many of their viewers would find incredibly insensitive. He's warned on a couple of occasions not to do this, and at a certain point they made a decision that he was not a valuable enough game changer to deal with the political stuff that he was doing on his own time to keep him on the air. So there's no doubt that he was partially removed, certainly for political reasons, but I think he's a unique case given some of the stuff he sent out, as well as the fact that he was a repeated offender. Do you buy into that kind of thesis?
Yeah, I think we actually agree with that. I mean, I think that there's always the judgment to be made about, you know, how much he delivers to the ratings, how much he
right.
delivers to the network, and whether to move it out. But the end result of moving him out is that who is the loudest conservative voice at ESPN right now?
On air or behind the scenes?
Front facing.
Will Cain,
I guess
Sage,
front facing is a new way of saying on air.
Will Cain, Sage Steele, Bob Lee, I guess Sam Ponder a little bit. Sage Steele maybe would be my guess.
I guess so. Bob Lee describes himself as a libertarian, which is not necessarily conservative.
Okay,
but,
fair enough.
But then if I ask about, you know, left-leaning views, you have a lot more people.
Absolutely.
With a lot bigger voices and a lot more power at ESPN. It's no surprise that there's this view of ESPN out there. And, of course, it's being shoved by Jimmy's old company.
Well, the thing is that, again, like, I don't want, you know, and I've said this a million times. I have to sort of keep repeating myself. And, by the way, you know, I actually said, when I said Schilling should not have been suspended, you can't win. Because I had people sort of on the left who were like, you suck. You're a disgrace. You agree with all this stuff. And then, you know, I have the normal people on the right who are like, you know, you're always this, you're always that. And then I show them the Schilling tweet and they don't respond back. So it's, you know, you're sort of like you can't win on this. But the I think, you know, I'll go to you, Jimmy. The fact that someone like Jemele Hill or Sarah Spain, or, you know, Bomani's kind of an interesting case because he's political, but not always political, or Levitard or whoever. John is right. There are more front-facing people. And here's the key, and this is what you got into, Jimmy, with sort of there's two parts of the story. They are so much more vocal and frequent on social media that you see them almost hourly or daily, in the same way Seth Davis and I at Sports Illustrated are very opinionated about politics. So you see our takes a lot. So I think there are people out there who are like, well, there's these six ESPNers who are always tweeting this stuff, so the whole company must be a certain way. But in reality, it's not 500 ESPNers doing it. It's probably like 10 to 20 who are doing it. You know, Pablo Torre and Sarah Spain and Jemele or whatever. And there becomes this perception that the entire 5,000 ESPN fleet thinks this way, which is just not the case.
Can I say something?
All right, go ahead. I realize John and I filibustered for a while.
This is so beyond stupid because there's a very simple way to handle this. If you do not like the opinions of those people, don't follow them on Twitter and don't watch their shows. And you can still be a big-time sports fan. Because I don't watch any of those shows, so I really just know stuff from Twitter about who believes what. But the bottom line is, if you're a big sports fan, you need to watch the NFL on ESPN, college basketball, college football on ESPN, the NBA on ESPN. And whether you're doing games, no one's talking about their political views. No one's getting into whether Donald Trump is this or that. When you watch a game, it's pretty politics-free on ESPN. So if the fact that whoever you mentioned is that Sage Steele is a conservative or Pablo Torre is a liberal, just don't watch their shows. You'll be fine.
Jimmy, we agree.
Don't miss anything.
Jimmy, we agree, though, that there's no doubt that people will not watch their favorite football team because of Colin Kaepernick, right? We both agree.
I mean, another. No, it wasn't just. Yeah, I mean, that one was really just. Yeah. People just passing on Packers Cowboys because Colin Kaepernick took a knee.
Actually, I'll be very honest. I'm taking it further. I'm not watching the NHL playoffs because Colin Kaepernick took a knee. I've just decided I'm not watching the Maple Leafs and the Capitals. John, is there anything you won't watch because of Colin Kaepernick? Dancing with the Stars, perhaps, or the Americans?
I will. I try to watch as few 49er games as possible, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not saying people having in a survey said, you know, I'm not watching the NFL, but like, if you just step back and just did the logic on this, you live in Buffalo, New York, you love the Bills, because some dude is doing something 3,000 miles away that you may disagree with, are you really not going to turn on your favorite Buffalo Bills on Sunday at 1 o'clock? I mean, come on now, please. I sound a little Francesa there. All right, John, you have, this might have been, did you break the Amazon gets Thursday Night Football story?
Was that yours? You know what? It was a shared break with Recode, Peter Kafka, and the Journal with Joe Flynn.
Gotcha. So clearly, you three have some nice Amazon sources feeding you stuff. All right. So you three break that. Thursday night package goes to Amazon for $50 million. It's no longer on Twitter. We should say this is not the Thursday night package. It's like the fourth way you could watch it. But great news for Amazon to me, John, in that they get the NFL. They want original content. This is the best original content on, I don't even want to say on television, but just the, sort of the best original content in terms of viewership. They're going to use this to market Amazon Prime. It's very cheap for them, right, because they're a multi-billion dollar company. And it probably hurts Twitter because Twitter was had this whole live game strategy, and now they don't have the NFL. How did you, the people who are listening to this, how should they view this? What does this mean?
What this means is that the idea of a sports rights bubble that's about to burst in 2021 when all these rights are up is a folly, and that it's still there. And if I'm the NFL and I'm Major League Baseball and I'm, you know, even MLS and all these bigger leagues, I am going to be thrilled because all of a sudden you have deep pocketed companies like Amazon, Twitter as well, you know, that are tasting and sampling live sports content from the, you know, most popular sport that's out there. I mean, Twitter had that one-year deal, and they were at the table, and they were trying to keep this package because they tasted the NFL. They saw the power of the NFL. They were able to grow thanks to the NFL programming by having their app downloaded on a bunch of connected TVs, and so they were able to sort of establish a lot of growth beyond just the streams of the game. And I think that you're going to see the same thing with Amazon Prime. I think you're going to see Prime membership go up. I think that it's going, people are going to sample the football and then check out a lot of the other sports offerings they have. Apparently, Amazon Prime subscribers, they spend more on Amazon. You know, there's free shipping. So, I mean, it just works out well. And when by the time these rights come up and companies like ESPN perhaps or Fox perhaps are saying, all these cord cutters, we don't have as much money, so we can't spend as much as we used to. Right now, the NFL is cultivating these digital companies like Amazon and Twitter, Facebook bid, YouTube bid, and those companies in 2021, we've been talking about it for 20 years, but they're finally going to be lining up to get those rights.
Wow, that's interesting. That's really
You didn't even hear his answer, Richard. You just tweeted while he was speaking.
I'm still
what
listening.
Kind of host
did he tweet?
I tweeted out. I just basically published a NHL playoff preview on television, so I had to get that out there. First of all, I thought I saw Jimmy tweet as well during this podcast too. But that's it, John. That's fascinating to me in that finally
it's fascinating. You just tweeted out your NHL column.
It's still fascinating because the 2021 date is really interesting in that we're going to see game changing people come in terms of who's going to be part of these new deals. Assuming obviously that some of these deals are not upped prior to them. Jimmy, did you have a take on the Amazon? I mean, first of all, Jimmy, let me ask you as the voice of the fan. Did you actually go on Twitter last year and watch any of these Thursday night games?
No.
Okay, so that tells me something there. And I think John knows that the numbers for that were not great no matter what Twitter puts out. I don't know, Jimmy, would you get the Amazon version of this on Prime?
I have Amazon Prime, but if I did not, I would not go get Amazon Prime just so I could watch. Listen, the bottom, I mean, I'm home Thursday night. I watch the NFL. If there were one or two Thursdays, I wasn't going to be home. If I have to miss one of those terrible games, it's not the end of the world. And there's also, you know, you call someone with your Amazon password, boom, you go watch it. I mean, I don't think people are going to be signing up in droves to Amazon Prime to watch. I mean, I don't know, maybe younger people have cut the cord. They will, but I'm not. I'm an old man, so I still watch television.
Is there anything else we should do on this thing? John, you're the expert here. Is there something else you want to mention?
The only other thing is, I mean, Jimmy's right. There's the whole cliche in this business is best available screen. So if you're home, you're going to watch it on television. But if you're one thing that they found with Twitter, like if you're international, you're watching it on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, I was on the Acela a couple of times on a Thursday night, and I was able to, you know, watch it on my cell phone via Twitter. And it was a pretty good experience watching it that way.
Did your Amazon...
also a...
Sorry, John. Did your Amazon sources tell you that they're interested in bringing more people globally in, or even like Canadians in, obviously, because... that's close to the NFL.
Oh, yeah, they're trying to take Prime and make it international. And Jim DiLorenzo, who I believe used to work with you guys, right?
He did, yep. He was our publisher for SI.com.
You know, they hired him about a year ago to run sports and try to get these sports rights. So, I mean, they're big on this, and they're really trying to get him.
I like DiLorenzo. Those are excellent hire by them. All right, what else? Masters. Don't really spend a lot of time on golf on this podcast, but we will here. I'll start with you, John. I'm swiping this from Sports Business Daily. Masters drew a little over $11 million on CBS for its final round coverage. According to the great Paulson at Sports Media Watch, that's down 11% from last year, 22% from 2015. And here's the crazy thing, John. The 6.8 rating was tied for the lowest final round of the Masters since 1980. I mean, what happened? Like, you would have thought, given Garcia and Rose playoff hole, I mean, that last hour was pretty dramatic, but yet this rating, generally speaking, tanked.
Yeah, I mean, there are a million potential reasons. I know here in D.C., the weather was fantastic, and so I think a lot of people probably were outside instead of staying and watching golf. But what's happening to the Masters really happened everywhere. I mean, the NFL ratings were down, NBA ratings are down. There's been, I think people are trying to figure out why. It was an easy excuse to say it was the election and all of the, you know, Trump and Hillary taking the oxygen out of the room, you know, with people going to the news networks. And I think that's still coming into play somewhat, but on a Sunday afternoon, I find it hard to believe people are going to Fox News or CNN instead of a Masters. So, you know, the real thing is to look next year and see what happens and if it bounces back. But that kind of rating on 1 year, if I were, you know, CBS or if I were, you know, golf, I would find that concerning.
Jimmy?
Yeah, I think John hit the nail on the head about, I think the weather was a factor. I know it was just as nice here in New York. I know a lot of people like Sergio Garcia, but I'm not sure he's going to. I mean, I think if you're expecting those levels of Tiger Phil, I mean, it's just not going to happen. And there's so much competition. You know, first week of baseball, NBA season winding down. I just think there's a lot of options out there for people too. So I do think it's a little strange. It was such a dramatic decrease. I wouldn't even begin to offer any other reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, weather was beautiful on the East Coast and the Midwest. You'd think that would be a fact. The other thing is there was no momentum from the first couple of days. The numbers were down on ESPN too. So very strange. And as John said, we'll see next year what this means. Numbers have been down since Tiger. We all know that, but that was a strange one, just given the drama. All right, we'll finish up with a couple of quick things here. John, U.S., if the U.S. gets the World Cup in 2026, Fox will have that. That'll be a massive television success, right? And that's great for Fox, but here's the problem for Fox. 2018 Russia, 2022 Qatar. You think in hindsight, as we look back on that World Cup deal for Fox, maybe not as great as they once thought, but maybe they get bailed out in 2026 if it's in the U.S.?
I mean, they almost have to get bailed out in 2026. I think for the amount of money they paid and all the problems going on in Qatar and you know what's Russia. Expected over in Russia, it's I think that personally, if they had a do-over, I think they would do a do-over on that one. I mean, it's just tough.
Interesting, and they'd sort of make they've invested a lot. They've sort of declared themselves as the home of soccer in the U.S. That's an interesting perspective. Jimmy, I know soccer's not really your thing. But
home of soccer, but you know, NBC owns the EPL, which
they do,
is
and ESPN. ESPN has MLS, part of MLS, as well as part of the. I think they have some national team games too. So, but listen, if you have the World Cup, you generally wear the crown of soccer in the U.S. You agree?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, NBC's coverage is better than Fox's. I mean, that's like saying the. You know, the sun is better than rain, and we all know that. But if you have the World Cup, you get that crown. Jimmy, is there anything you want, now that you're at Sports Illustrated, and we're into this podcast, now 50 minutes in, is there anything you want to talk about in terms of your tenure at Fox, now that you're out of there? We are still partners with them in some sense, so you can't really trash them, but is there anything you want to say? I mean,
I'm very happy to be back at Sports Illustrated.
Do you think Fox Sports plays games with its social media metrics, particularly people's Twitter followers?
Look at the numbers and draw your own conclusion.
You said you were eventually going to talk about this, and now you're diplomating me. You're Kofi Annaning.
I never said that.
Unbelievable. Wow. It's supposed to be a transparent podcast.
So, Jimmy, when you went over to when
Sean
you went
Spicering
over to Fox,
it up.
Can you let John ask you questions? Go ahead, John.
So when you went over to Fox, was it what you were expecting? Or when you got in there, did you look around and say, like, you know, where the hell am I and what am I doing?
Good question.
Let's see. When I went to Fox, It was for several reasons. It wasn't just one reason. I was very tired of doing hot clicks at SI. I had done them for 7 years. I was burnt out from it. And I thought it sort of, you know, I didn't want to do them forever. Two, there were some transitions in upper management at SI that I didn't love. We'll just leave it at that.
I know the answer to that, but I'm not going to sell you out here. Go ahead.
Thank you. And three, Fox gave me the opportunity to work from home, which after like 15 years of commuting from Long Island to the city was a pleasant change. So I was excited about those things, which was the main reason for my leaving. But when I got there, I would say I quickly realized that, and maybe it was foolish on my part not to expect this, but let's see. I'm going to put this in a nice way.
Jesus, this segment has been disappointing so far.
Let's just say the website was not like a high priority, it felt like. And, you know, I can understand that. They had two TV networks going at the time. They have the Big Fox and then they have FS1. So, you know, the website may not have gotten sort of like the attention and stuff that it needed. So that was not great. And then I guess it was sort of the end of my time there when they started to go into the Skip Bayless, Colin Cowherd, Jason Whitlock era. So getting let go from there was a blessing in disguise in many ways.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I honestly had more optimism for that segment. Boy, that's like when you know, Jimmy and I both watch wrestling, and that's, you know, you feel like you got two guys coming in the ring. There's a lot of heat, and then the fans are on their hands. I don't even know if I could save the segment at this point. I am looking right now. I like the guys who actually run FoxSports.com in terms of the management types, but
really, like who?
I like Mark Pesavanto. He's a good guy. Mm-hmm.
They turned the website into like video clips.
I know that. I was just going to say it. If you're a writer there, like if you're like our buddies Mandel and Bruce Feldman, Stu Mandel, it's got to be depressing. Like I am literally on the site right now, and the lead story is Shannon Sharp reacting to Dez Bryant. That's the lead story of the site.
Well, that's why I said.
Yeah. I'm not saying SI is Washington Post or New York Times. So don't get me wrong. I'm not company manning it here. We got freaking issues. I mean, thank God the freaking site works these days in terms of IT. So I'm not pretending that SI doesn't got issues. But that, if you are a writer or if you sort of care about edit and you're working at a site and the lead is either Skip Bayless or Shannon Sharp's take, that's tough. I think it's a little demoralizing. That's how I would look at it.
You said what I said, basically.
All right. Well, there. Thank God. I mean, all right. Jimmy didn't really deliver there, but that's okay. I mean, not even the Undertaker lost. That's how I look at it. Sometimes you can't win. John, is there anything that we have not gotten to? We're We're 70 minutes. First of all, I don't think this roundtable has been nearly the best one we've done. I would rank it as number three or four tops. Would you agree, John?
It took a little while to gel.
Yeah, I mean, give us all feedback, but this to me is a B plus at best, maybe a B.
You go too long on one topic. You need more topics and go shorter. Come on, Richard.
So this is like you're like Eric Rideholm. It should be more like PTI, is what you're saying.
Sure. Like, we didn't even talk about the Francesca Russo documentary that you saw.
Yeah, I mean, does anybody care about the Francesca documentary other than you?
Yes.
Have you seen it yet?
No. I'm hoping to see you at the screening next week.
It's Tribeca. Yeah, it's worth seeing. I mean, if you're a Mike and the Mad Dog fan or you were seeing it, it's interesting and for sure, and a good job.
You didn't bring up Mike Golic and Mike Greenberg splitting up. I mean, how will America recover from
that? We've done that. Let me ask you this, John, because I asked Miller this, and my God, did he, Jim Miller, he diplomated his way out of this. It annoyed me. My thesis, John, is that, listen, Mike Greenberg, nice guy. You want him to drive your kids to school. Fantastic. Nice guy. That was a little Trump by me there. Nice guy. Fantastic.
That is so rude.
Chocolate cake. He is a nice guy. But John Oren, here's what I would say. We know what Mike and Mike's ratings are in terms of the simulcast on ESPN2. There's sort of a finite number there. 250,000 people, 220, 210. Maybe if it's the NFL season, creeps to 300,000. Mike Greenberg is now entering an environment where not only does he have to compete against sports shows that are on in the morning on the NFL Network, MLB Network, Fox Sports 1 is going to have a show eventually there. So not only does he have to sort of, and not to mention ESPN 2, not only is he going to have to compete against those guys, he's going to have to compete against the three major morning shows, Today, Good Morning America, and the CBS show. So love the CBS show.
Are you going to get this question out
by
Sunday?
Eventually. And, John, he has to compete against cable news, which in the Trump era, as you know, people are flocking to CNN, the Fox and Friends, Morning Joe. I don't see any possible way Mike Greenberg can have a breakout hit on that time slot. I'm not even sure what kind of ratings he could get. You have invested millions and millions of dollars in this guy, and you're going to give him this show, which is great for him. And listen, if I, you know, if I was rep by CAA and the Kaiser Soze's there, I would want these guys to make me money. I would want these guys to make me big money too, and I'd be thanking them every day. But John Oren, how on earth can this be successful? It can't be, correct? There's no offense to Mike Greenberg. There's no way this kind of show can be a big hit.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Ugh, you're unbelievable.
I think Mike Greenberg is an utter talent. I really do. I think that he carried Mike and Mike completely and became like the ratings. Think about morning radio, and all of a sudden you have a national radio show coming in competing against local radio, and they did really well. They were number one in most markets, I think, and it wasn't because of Golic. I think it was because of Greenberg, and I just think that you put Greenberg, you have Connor Schell that's involved with all of this. I'm not going to be surprised if they have what's a hit. I don't know what a hit is, but you know, the kind of success that Scott Van Pelt seeing at midnight, I could see that happening in the morning as well.
Well, John Oren has just guaranteed himself at least 15 leaks that I'm not going to get now after that. So good, very smart on his part. Jimmy,
Transparent? Was it really that transparent?
It was that transparent. Jimmy, go ahead, because you were laughing during the middle of John's answer.
I mean, it's just impossible to be nice about this. Could you be more? I mean, we called Jim Nance vanilla earlier. What's more vanilla than vanilla?
Right.
Mike Greenberg. I mean,
that's a hard take. That's a hard take to swallow from John Oren there. I agree with
you. You guys are so New York. Think of the middle of the country, man. It's going to work perfectly.
But why would the middle? I guess I would say let me take
so
this.
You're
premise.
Calling the middle of the country stupid.
Why would the fine people in Indianapolis or Iowa watch Mike Greenberg instead of watching the Today Show or Good Morning America or whatever they're watching? That's what I would.
Because
say.
They like sports. Because it's going to have a sports focus. You're tired of politics. You don't want to watch a Today Show. I'm going to go to ESPN. I'm going to listen to a radio voice that I've been listening to for the past decade, who I like and trust. I think it's going to be good.
So Mike Greenberg comes on. He's wearing his Northwestern shirt. and he's making bacon and eggs with Seattle Seahawks fan Mario Batali. You're telling me, or whatever it turns out to be, that's the hit. That's the game changer. Or Greenberg comes on and interviews Rod. He and Roger Goodell, they're on a seesaw, and they go back and forth on the swing, and they interview each other. That's the game changer, John.
I don't think it has to be. Why does it have to be a game changer? I think it just has to be a show that's going to get viewers. And I would suspect in an ESPN slot and a well-known name who carried a radio show on his own, I think he's going to do all right.
I will say this.
Think Morning Joe. I think it'll be something along those lines.
By the way, for all you Yahoos out there who are upset about all the promotion that Jamel and Michael got, buckle up. buckle up. Because ESPN is going to be sending you millions of dollars worth of marketing. Mike Greenberg will literally be, he might be on every milk carton in this country by the time that marketing is done. So buckle up, because they are going to spend a crap load of money.
What did Miller say? How was he diplomatic on that?
He, of course, like you, wants all these sources to continue to talk to him. So he basically said that, you have to understand that it's sort of opportunity cost, and that the climate is changing, and you can't think of it as, it's going to be an outright hit, but he's going to provide, solid value for those 4 hours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, listen.
Wait, his show is going to be 4 hours long?
I think it's going to be 6 to 10, John, from everything I've heard.
Oh, my God.
Or 6 to 9. What have you heard? Have you heard anything different, John?
I'm not sure on the actual length, but that's what the radio, that's how long the radio
show
is.
Yeah, the radio show's that long, yeah. Jimmy, he won't be alone. He's going to be, it'd be interesting to see if any of the current morning show people, Nagandhi, Jay Harris, I wonder if any of those guys will
float
over.
You two have never listened to Mike and Mike before.
Of course we
have. You guys listen to Mike and Mike ever? I have.
Many times.
I don't listen to it.
Yeah, of course I've listened to it. Listen, I think they're, as Trog Keller, a guy who John and I both know and respect very much, a guy who runs ESPN Audio, he has always said that he wanted a radio show where parents could drive their kids and listen to the radio shows they drove them to school. Mike and Mike are absolutely those guys. They've done that for 15 years. It's an unbelievably impressive achievement to be doing that kind of stuff for that long and to carry an audience for that long. So I respect what they've done, but for my sensibilities, that's not going to be my first or second choice at all. But I agree, there are a lot of people out there, particularly with young families, who want to hear sports in the morning, and that's a perfect fit. But John, this, they can never win in a big sports craze market. They have no chance, zero. They're not ever winning.
It's such a lame argument about, if Scott Van Pelt was doing the show, you couldn't listen to it while your kids were in the car.
I'm just telling you what ESPN's exec said. I'm not saying that's my thing.
I'm just saying, like, Scott Van Pelt has 8 billion times more personality than Mike Greenberg. You could listen to Scott Van Pelt in the car with your kids. I mean, it's such a lame.
Well, you probably could, because he was on ESPN radio for a long time.
So, you probably could, but I'll tell you, not to sound like a prude, but bad beats and gambling and stuff. Do you want that in the car?
John, I don't care, but I think that
would be something.
John and I have kids. Jimmy doesn't. So this is, we're all sort of, we're coming from our own viewpoints. But the thing is,
if your kid's a sports fan, he's not going to know what gambling is. Okay.
Listen, here is the thing, though, and this is where my premise about Mike Greenberg comes in. Mike and Mike have been on the radio for a long time. They have they are no factor in major cities in this country. New York City, no factor. They get occasionally to the top 10 or 9 in their time slot, nothing. Boston, my God. I mean, what are they, in the 40s? Philly, Washington, D.C., go down the list of maybe they're a little bit better in Chicago, Miami, not really a factor. I mean, like, in major cities, they're not a factor. In a lot of places, small college towns, middle of the country, some other places, absolutely, big time. But I can't see you having big success on a television product if you're not rolling in major cities. But that's where John disagrees with me. We've spent way too much time on this topic anyway. All right, listen. We've said a lot. We've said so much. We're 80 minutes in. I'm going to end it here. Is there anything that you two would like to add to this podcast?
What is going on with Adrian
Woj?
I have no updates on that, actually, other than what has been out there. John, do you?
I know that Deadspin's Kevin Draper had something. When was that? In January?
Yeah, yeah.
He was going to ESPN. I called a couple sources at ESPN immediately after Draper wrote that. They said, like, you know, it's most likely true, and I haven't looked into it in the past 2 months. So
the thing is with cost cutting, of course, that's a big salary to bring in, and from what I've heard, Adrian's a pretty loyal guy and is going to want to bring his own people in. So that would be a big add to bring his guys in, and so it may still happen.
Happen,
but we'll see.
Quickly on that.
I mean, I haven't reported, John. I would not expect anything to happen quickly. Would you?
No, not at all.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy, is there
anything? I think all the layoffs that are coming from their on-air talent, I mean, this is it's a tricky move to make for them.
All right, listen.
Richard, I have one more for you.
Jimmy, anything else? Come on, Jimmy. Lou Pellegrino wants to get out of here.
Should the WWE fire JBL?
Well, as Meltzer would say, JBL is a symptom. It's not the problem. The problem is letting bullying culture be part of that. And Mauro Ranallo, who I think is a terrific broadcaster, who's now not going to be back on their programming, really pisses me off, quite frankly.
Ooh,
and we'll eventually, hopefully, we'll get to the bottom of it, I hope, if Mauro eventually talks. But, you know, it's very clear something happened there, and it's very clear that Mauro made a decision not to go back. If I had to guess, Jimmy, just off the top of my head, I'm going to guess a suspension at a certain point or a reduction of his time. He goes way back with Vince. I don't think they're going to outright fire him unless, and this is where Meltzer said, unless the public outcry is so great, it goes mainstream and advertisers start to give them a hard time. But I don't think that'll happen. I think the heat's going to come down off JBL, but he's never going to be the same. He'll never be looked at the same in arenas, never be looked at the same in some of the wrestling
shows. But the
only
thing about that is this is not new. I mean, there's been stories about him being just so horrible to people for years. Obviously, what happened with this situation, I mean, caused, you know, physical and mental breakdown for someone.
Well, we don't know if that happened there, but it'd be very clear. Mauro, I think, made a decision that he didn't want to be in that environment. I don't know what happened. But Jimmy, like, I think this is where Meltzer, who I love and who's been a podcast guest, is correct. It's not, he's a symptom. I mean, ultimately, this happens, right? Because the top people allow it to happen. Because McMahon's allow it to happen.
Yeah, but why?
And I love the WWE, but you gotta, if you're the WWE, you gotta own this. Not to mention the fact, I think Jimmy, both and I, we're closer to this than John. ESPN hasn't even touched this story, which is an absolute joke.
Well, why? Of course not. They're not gonna do anything to piss off the WWE.
But they have more leverage than the WWE. What, you think the WWE is not going to put their stars on ESPN? Of course they are. They need ESPN.
Oh, I think
they need ESPN more than ESPN needs them.
I don't know if I necessarily believe that. I really don't.
Really?
Because ESPN, well, ESPN, I mean, I think covering the WWE gives ESPN some new
viewers. I agree.
Audience. I think it gives them, you know, it makes them look like they're not, you know, just ESPN.
Where else is the WWE getting that kind of mainstream attention? Nowhere else.
Everybody covers the mainstream.
Nobody as big as ESPN. ESPN has far more leverage, in my opinion.
That's fair, I guess. All right, more important, you just tweeted again, so clearly, again, not paying attention to your own podcast.
Yeah, I'm about done. I'm bored with this myself. At this point, I'm bored with my own
voice.
Give
me a percentage.
I tweeted out Dawn Staley throwing out the first pitch at a baseball game.
Just give me a percentage that Bill O'Reilly does not return to Fox News after this Easter break that he's on.
I think it's more likely that Bill O'Reilly does not return to Fox than JBL does not return to the WWE, would be my...
I asked for a percentage.
I'm going to say 35%. I think he'll still be
that high. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Fox can do what it wants. I mean, you know, ultimately, they can still make money off O'Reilly even if the advertisers are gone. John, you want to weigh in on that? I know you're not a wrestling guy, but you certainly followed the O'Reilly saga.
Yeah, I know nothing other than what I read. It looks like it's better than 50-50 he doesn't come back.
That's interesting.
Doesn't it? Wow.
If we're talking about what they should do, his ass should be out. I mean, that's a joke that he's there. And again, O'Reilly is a symptom.
Snowflake alert.
Right. Roger Ailes and his posse are the reason why this happens. My God, man, look at all the people who take Fox News' money who look the other way on this shit, if I can be very blunt. All right, anyway.
The ridiculous part of that story, if I can just jump in.
Yeah, thank God, because I don't want to hear Jimmy's voice anymore.
The advertiser defections mean nothing because, you know, the amount of You know, like ESPN, Fox News makes all their money from cable affiliate fees. And if they dump O'Reilly, there's a potential that a lot of, I mean, it's one of the highest rated shows on cable TV. I mean, there's potential that, you know, you will get his audience with pitchforks out there demanding that he gets back on. So they,
well, and the other thing that the joke is the advertisers who have pulled their stuff from his show are just putting on other Fox News shows. So is that really
going elsewhere? Yeah.
Well, not just to mention that. Here's this, and I know you guys know this. What happened on Fox with Megyn Kelly? She left. Tucker Carlson came in and beat her ratings. O'Reilly leaves. Right. They'll bring in who's that knucklehead who follows him? Jesse, whatever.
Eric Bowling.
Yeah, whatever. Who? Any of these guys are going to come in. If they don't get O'Reilly's rating, they're going to come close. So it doesn't matter. The people who love that network and love that show will be on there. But I think that, and John, you know, we know some Fox News people. Don't you feel like they're going to be like, they're very stubborn. They think of themselves as pirates. Isn't going to be a little bit of an FU, like we're not letting the media take this scalp. We're going to keep them on the air.
Yeah, absolutely. And Megyn Kelly going was, you know, Megyn Kelly was the quote unquote liberal. So, you know, they were happy to see her go.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's something about standing behind Sean Hannity, and there's something about standing behind Bill O'Reilly. It's like, you know, yeah, we're not going to let the Twitterati or you know, the popular press try to move these people out.
By the way, nothing better, nothing more enjoyable than when some of these political reporters find old tweets. And like Hannity blasting that lazy Barack Obama for golfing while we're attacking Syria is something incredible. All right, listen.
Just a liberal. Yeah, why don't you go work for ESPN?
All right, listen. We've learned.
I have one last question.
Jimmy, come on. This podcast is now almost a C.
Can you please come into the SI office a little more? Does John know that you're a mirage? You come in like for an hour once a week?
Well, because I find it a lot easier to work out of the office these days because it's too loud.
You can tweet from the office. The computers there work just fine.
All right, whatever. As long as I'm producing content, I should be able to produce it from wherever. But I'm going to probably come in more over the next couple weeks. That is true. I'll be in tomorrow, actually. We're taping this on a Wednesday.
Can't wait.
All right. Jimmy Traina is he's the new conscience of Sports Illustrated. I believe that's his title. And John Oran, of course, is the media writer and reporter for Sports Business Journal and Sports Business Daily. They are the core members of the Sports Illustrated Media Roundtable, and I appreciate their time. John, thank you very much. Jimmy, thank you very much.
Bye, Richard.
Thanks, RD.
All right. Wow. Thank God this is over, this podcast. My thanks to John Oran and Jimmy Traina. Actually, my real thanks to Lou Pellegrino, who has to edit this nonsense. That was long. And if you stuck to the end, I appreciate it. All right. Should we do a code word, Lou Pellegrino? Anybody who got to the end of this, make it a wrestling one.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's see. What can the wrestling term be? The wrestling term
Macho
is
Man,
going
Macho?
To be... No, we're going to go really funny with this one. Classy Freddie Blassie.
That's too long.
It
on
is
Twitter.
Not. It's perfect.
How about just classy?
Classy, perfect.
Okay, so classy. If you got to the end of this,
okay.
At Lou Pellegrino or myself, classy, and that'll be that. I'm not gonna
wait a minute. After the length of this podcast, you're going to say classy Freddie Blassie's too long? But all right, hashtag classy.
That's good. That's funny. All right, my thanks to Jimmy and John for their lengthy podcast and to the previous podcast guests, including Bob McCown, Jim Miller, Jim Trotter, and Erica Nardini, and the many others who have been part of this podcast. And we'll get you some good guests coming up. I believe Kevin Harlan is coming up very soon, the fine broadcaster from Turner Sports and Westwood One. All right, for Lou Pellegrino, for the guys at Digital Media, for all the people at Sports Illustrated, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.